This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there, buddies. It's Michael Cruz Kane back again with another episode of A Good Cry. This time with Heather McMahon, who, if you don't know, as a stand-up comedian or as the host of the extremely popular podcast Absolutely Not, or as a person with a kajillion followers on Instagram, or from an upcoming NBC show that's in development right now that I think is currently titled I Just Can't Right Now, you should. Heather McMahon is, I guess I would describe her as a comedic force of nature. She has a sunshine disposition that shines through even when we are talking about the absolutely grimmest, G-R-I-M-M-E-S-T, the most grim things, including, in this case, her father, who got pancreatic cancer and died within a week of that diagnosis. We talk a lot about the difference between having no time to be with the person who dies and possibly in some other scenario, having a lot of time. We talk about her outlook. We talk about how her faith prepared her for and helped her relate to the idea of death. And we had, paradoxically, a great, great time. I hope you enjoy this episode. I had a great time recording it. And I hope you'll check out Heather wherever you can. She's on tour now. She's got a show coming. I mean, she's pretty much every place and for good reason. This is A Good Cry with Heather McMahon. Okay, cool. So now the podcast is happening. 3, 2, 1 now. Heather, thank you for joining me. The way we start off A Good Cry is by asking our guests how they would describe their relationship with grief. Does that question have meaning to you?
It does. So what is my relationship with grief? Well, particularly, I lost my dad to cancer 7 years ago, and it was a gnarly, very quick ride from the day of diagnosis to the day of death. My dad died in 1 week, which is, yeah, it's not your typical cancer situation. So for me, I mean, my relationship with grief is like, I miss my dad every fucking day. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I had to watch this man who was just like my hero and my idol and my icon pass away so quickly in front of me. But for me, grief is a wild roller coaster of emotion, right? I mean, that's a simplified way to say it. But some days you're good, some days you're not. I've had to have a glass half full approach to life since my dad's passed because, you know, I'm in comedy and it's like, how do you pull from the heavy shit that you've gone through and share that experience? So I talk about what I've been through the last 2 years on the road. You know, it's like I talk about it every day. Literally every time I'm on doing a show, I'm talking about this particular incident.
When you say you talk about it in your, is it, it's part of your act or like,
yes,
it's like something that you, are you just like riffing on stage because it's something you think about?
No. So my, I'm going to shoot a special at the end of the month and it's right now working title is Good Grief, but the whole show is about me losing my dad and moving home afterwards and like what that experience was like and how my career changed after my dad passed. So no, I've been talking about it in like a really dark, cynical, funny way for the last publicly the last 3 years, which is wild. You know what I mean? I never thought that would be a part of my story.
Yeah. Well, okay. There's so many things I have questions about. So to go back to your dad died, it took a week, like from diagnosis to death.
Yeah. Okay. It was so wild. They took him to the hospital because they thought he had like pancreatitis. Turns out he had pancreatic cancer. Shit. Our neighbor about 10 houses down, who's a fucking asshole, he's been alive for 15 years with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. So fucker. I also have a, I have a major theory on that. We got him to MD Anderson. We live in Atlanta. We found out he had pancreatic cancer. We flew him to MD Anderson in Houston. And literally 6 days later, he's dead. Like, it was fucking crazy. So I have a weird thing with people who go through, you know, lose somebody to cancer. Like, we didn't have an opportunity for chemo. There was no radiation. There was no treatment plan. As far as I'm concerned, the guy had a heart attack and went belly up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was so quick.
What was it like the first day? Like,
yeah.
The first day of that week, he just like was feeling unwell, or he was like suddenly like, couldn't get up? Or how did we know to even get him looked at?
I was actually in the Puerto Rico for my friend's wedding, and I had a weird feeling because my parents were supposed to come to this wedding. So my dad wasn't feeling well, and about a month prior, he got misdiagnosed with diabetes. My dad was a big Southern dude, but like didn't have diabetes, but you know, your pancreas creates insulin and all those things, so they misdiagnosed him. Well, turns out he was just riddled with cancer. So we basically got him to the doctor and they were like, yeah, so it is now metastasized to his stomach, his liver, and my dad wasn't a drinker, and his pancreas. So they took him in because one day my mom came home from brunch with her girlfriends and he was like yellow, just sitting in the kitchen like, I don't feel good, completely jaundiced, and they rushed him to the hospital. So I was at my best friend's wedding and I had a weird feeling. Michael, I don't know. Like, I, in a weird way, I feel like God sort of prepared me for this. I told my husband, who's my boyfriend at the time, I said, my dad has cancer. And he's like, no, you're being so dramatic. This is fucking crazy. I go, no, something is telling me it's way deeper than it is. And sure enough, nobody told me. My sister was home. My parents didn't come to the wedding. And I flew home 2 days later and I get in the car with my sister. She picks me up from the airport. And I said, so how bad's the cancer? And my sister says, I can't believe mom told you. We wanted you to enjoy the wedding. Like, this is bullshit. I said, nobody told me. I just had an inkling. She's like, it's, you know, stage 4. So it was the weirdest thing. Yeah. But he was misdiagnosed.
With that misdiagnosis, like, how does that, when you think about that, is it the kind of thing where it's like, are you furious about it? I mean.
Yeah, I'm furious because, listen, I don't know. It's layered. Like, you know, now being on the other side of it, like, whatever. The way it went down is the way it was supposed to go down. I can't change that. But he did get on a diabetes medicine that then, I think, triggered him, like, going downhill immediately.
Like, that they made everything much worse.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. I mean, just to be able to keep, like, my sanity and to be able to close my eyes and, like, sleep at night, I have to tell myself that, like, the way it happened was how it was supposed to happen, and I did everything I could, and we got him in the best care. But, like, in my mind, do I fucking spiral? Yeah, I do, you know?
Totally, totally. I mean, I feel that same way about my son. It's like, okay, well, he died, and there was, like, nothing you can do about it, but then there are, like, little things where you're like, but maybe, like, what if we had gone an hour earlier that one night? Would that have changed everything? Yep. And it is, like, to open up that box is like hell is inside of there, just like coming out at you completely.
The seventh layer. You are deep in hell. Yeah.
Yeah. You're way, way down.
Oh, and then everybody, too, has, like, this idea of when you hear cancer, right? They're like, oh, well, why didn't you try to this? Or why didn't you do that? And it's like, no. Like, my favorite thing is when people are like, when I first said something to my friends, is like, guys, he has cancer. Like, he's gonna fight it. I'm like, no, the fuck he's not. You know what I mean? Like, they were like, this is a death wish. You know, he's already going downhill. And I was like, no, my dad is tired. Like, it's not gonna happen. There's no fighting. I love people who do fight cancer, and that's amazing and like great for them. But I was like, we didn't have a literal fighting chance.
Yeah. And I think also, like, this is maybe not a sensitive thing to say. In my own mind, it's like, if I get something like cancer that's like really, really, like, it's really bad. It's stage 4. There's a part of me that's like, I don't need to fight. Like, let's just,
Dude, that is not fucked up to say. Yeah, I completely agree. I'm out. And now that, like, I watched my dad pass through that, and I thought about, like, my dad was like this big old Southern guy. Like, you know, I can't imagine driving his ass to chemo. I would have killed him myself. I would have been like, get in the car. You can't smoke a cigarette. Lock it down. No, I'm not taking you to get Popeyes. Like, it's not happening. Just get in the car. I'm driving you to chemo. I would have killed him myself, for sure.
It is also with the, just to go back to the misdiagnosis, like, we had what I would describe as, like, excellent medical care. Like, we loved our doctors.
Right.
We loved our nurses. But a thing that people don't know about those situations until you're in them is that, like, they're making half the shit up. Like,
no,
they're
shit.
So smart. They're totally, they've learned everything they can learn, but every human being is different and presents them in a different way. And whoever it was that diagnosed your dad with diabetes had probably seen 100 people with the same symptoms that had diabetes. So they're like, well, it's got to be that. But there's much like art to it that isn't like, you know, you just punch a bunch of symptoms into like a WebMD and it's like, you have this.
Yeah, and my dad was like a heavier guy. So I can imagine like his doctor was like, oh yeah, Kyle, that's the diabetes is kicking in. You know what I mean? Like, I can't blame him for that. But my mom still goes back to the same doctor because it was our like family primary care. And I do get angry with that. I'm like, mom.
That is wild.
So wild. But you know, like the boomers, they're stubborn on shit. And I'm like, right now my mom's got, you know, needs to change her blood pressure medicine. And my mom is the tiniest little nugget. She's 75, doesn't look a day over 40, in amazing health, but has this cough from this blood pressure medicine. And I'm going to choke her out myself. Like, I'm like, and they won't go to the doctor. You know, like our parents, they refuse, they're stubborn. So I have to like put a black bag over her head, throw her in the back of my car and drag her to a new doctor next week. You know?
And is there any kind of like from that doctor, is there any like, we're doing no copays for you. We're doing...
We're
doing coupons or something.
Dude, you would think that they would like remove her bunions for free and she would never have another bill. We get house calls. No, you're still, it's still the fucking copay. You know, it's bullshit. It's all bullshit.
I love also to imagine one of my favorite versions of a couple is enormous man, tiny woman. I love that.
No, that is actually my parents. I'll describe them for your listeners. It's my mom looks just like Judge Judy. Like literally Judge Judy. And my dad was Uncle Phil from the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but white. He was white Uncle Phil.
My brain went to Dr. Phil first, but I'm glad you corrected.
Yeah, no, Uncle Phil.
Great. Yeah. Ooh, what a good television program. Do people still, we can still watch that, right? The slap is like, who cares? We can still watch the...
Yes.
That's not been canceled yet.
No, okay, I don't think so.
Sidetrack. Okay, and then were there funny things that happened like right around your... dad dying? I feel like a thing that people assume is that it's like a total blackness in that time. And obviously it's super sad, but were there any things that happened in there that like brought laughter to you that you can remember?
Everything that happened in the hospital, honestly, it was absolutely hysterical. Like the doctor who came in to tell us that my dad wasn't going to make it was the most attractive man I've ever seen on the planet. He was Enrique fucking Iglesias. Stunning. Like literally the most stunning. I was like, this should be illegal. You can't send a hot doctor in to tell us. He's like, I'm so sorry, but your father's not going to make it. And I was like, can we fuck? Like he was just too good looking. Then, because my dad died in Houston, we had to get him back to Atlanta and he had already bought the burial plot and the tomb, like the casket. He made the phone call and he didn't want us to worry about a thing. And then we get to the funeral home. And they're like, your daddy's too fat for the casket he bought. And we're like, excuse me. And he's like, yeah, we're going to need a plus size casket. So we ended up cremating my dad because he was too fat for the regular size casket he bought. And because my mom was like, I'm not paying an extra $40,000 for a bigger casket and more land. No, we'll cremate him. So everything around my dad's death was hysterical. And that's when I knew my dad was such a funny guy. I was like, he's doing this all on purpose. Like, there's no way this wouldn't happen to anybody else. And when my mom and I went and my mom and my sister and I went in to pick out the burial plot, like even though we cremated him, we, you know, have a little headstone. We had more fun that day. And then the lady was like, well, Robin, who's my mom, you're, you know, Kyle already bought your burial plot. So while you're in here, do you want to just go ahead and pick out your headstone too? So then we sat in there, drank wine for 2 hours and picked out my mom's headstone too. And she's like, doing great. You know, I mean, at some point it's the business of death that becomes very funny.
Insane.
Yeah.
Something that I wanted to talk about, which you mentioned kind of like off the cuff, but you talked about God sent, like letting you know kind of that this was happening.
Yeah.
Can we talk about God?
Yeah, for sure.
So
yeah.
I went to church for, I was in a boys choir in an Episcopalian church, which I know for like most Christians is like, that's barely even Christian. But I did that for 3 years and I was like bar mitzvah because my dad's side is Jewish. So I have some experience with religion, but it never like took hold in me, even when I was going to church 3 times a week. How does that factor into the way that you process your grief?
Great question. So I am in like, I mean, I grew up in a, going to a religious school and stuff, but I very much so like have my own personal relationship with God, right? I don't go to church. I hate organized religion, but I am a Christian and I believe that God speaks to me in whatever way that is. He's always been active in my life. Right after, okay. Oh, where do I even begin with all this? You know, it was weird. I think if you're open to it and you hear those voices and you have that connection with whatever spiritual higher being it is, God, I think, was warning me and giving me a little like heads up. It was so weird. So the day I was flying back from the wedding and I had told my husband, I said, and my best friend was sitting next to me on the flight. We're flying back to Atlanta. I turned to her and said, something's going on. I know my dad has cancer. And everybody was like, you're wrong. You're wrong. So on the flight back, I start watching an episode of The Comeback, you know, with Lisa Kudrow.
Incredible
like one of the
show.
Best shows ever. Yes. Like Valerie Cherish. Like, I don't want to see that. Like, that is who I am inside. And it was an episode where she finds out that her makeup artist, Mickey, has cancer. Mm-hmm. And she goes to an improv. She's doing like improv training and she's getting up. And the only thing she can keep improvising is saying the word cancer, cancer over and over again. And I'm crying laughing. I'm like, this is the funniest shit I've ever seen. And as a comedy kid, I'm like, how many times have I been in this like awkward improv class at UCB, you know? And I was just dying. It was like God brought that exact moment to me to speak to me to say like, this is it. Like I kept hearing cancer and cancer over again. And within 20 minutes, we land and I get in the car and I was just like God reassuring me, hey, this is what it is. It was almost like he prepared me. Do you know what I mean? Like prepared me for what I was about to hear. And then it was weird because when we got to the hospital, we had my dad in intensive care. And when we were walking out of intensive care, moving my dad to palliative care, a nurse pulled me aside and she was hysterical. And she was like, sweetheart, we have a lot of people in intensive care who can't speak, who are not with us, who, you know, who are just not of mind and body. My dad was cracking jokes all the way up to palliative care. And she was like, I don't know how to tell you this. Like, I think he's going to pass tonight. And I said, he totally is. Like, we just had this moment. She's like, I'm so sorry you're having to deal with this. We get up to palliative care. And that night was the first night in 7 days that anybody had slept. My mom, my sister, and I were all in this very quiet hospital room. Because what people don't realize when you're in the ICU, it's just beeping and buzzers and people checking on you every 3 minutes. Palliative care was quiet. First time I fell asleep. We all had a laugh with my dad. We all fell asleep. And at 4:50 in the morning, I woke up and I felt this like cold sensation go over my body. And I woke up and I was the only one awake and I saw my dad take his last breath. And the nurse runs in because they have a tiny little monitor on his finger. So it's not making any noises, but they're aware. The nurse walks in and he looks at me and he's like, you good? And I was like, yeah, I think he just died. And he was like, he did. And so I woke up my mom and my sister. And it was the weirdest thing. I don't even know how to describe it, except I felt like God put me in that position to be the only one awake to see that. It was almost like my dad was coming over me being like, you got to take on my role now. I mean, I am my dad now in so many ways. Like I drive the rental car. I plan the vacations. I'm the one working all the time. Like I moved in with my mom. My husband and I live with my mom. Like I am dad of the family now. But it was just the weirdest thing. Like, I don't know why God picked me, but that was just my moment. I needed to be there. And I don't know. I hope that answered the question. I'm sorry. It's like so layered.
So like the cynical part of me goes to the other side of that, right? Which is like, God, why did you let my dad die?
Oh, for sure.
Is that part of it for you also?
Yeah. But you know what's really wild? My dad, one night when we were in the hospital together, he was like, I'm not worried about where I'm going. I've been there. Now, this is a really intense story, but my dad got in a really horrible car accident when he was in his 20s. And he had lost his younger brother like a year before that. He was in the operating room. So he had broken his hip, both of his legs. It was like horrible. He had broken all these bones in his body and he had an outer body experience where he saw himself being operated on in the operating room, in the OR. And he said he saw his brother. His brother was down like a brick tunnel, saw the light. And his brother was like, it's not your time yet. And my dad didn't believe in God before that. And he said, it's not your time yet. It's going to hurt. You got to go back because mom and dad can't lose both their sons. So then my dad said he woke up in the hospital and he pulled the nurse aside and he said, why is there a teddy bear in a choo-choo train up in the operating room? And the nurse immediately is like, we got to get somebody to talk to you. Apparently in hospitals, and I don't know if it was just at Emory in Atlanta, if you have an outer body experience, they have a way for you to, you know, they leave something in the top of the room that only if you were raised above your body could you see. And they said, sir, what you experienced was an outer body experience. And after that, my dad said it always changed him. He just knew God was real. He'd seen the other side. So flash forward again to when I'm in the hospital with my dad one night. And I said, Dad, like, are you worried? He goes, no, I know where I'm going. I've been there before. And my dad was the coolest fucking guy. He was not like, he was just cool. He smoked a lot of weed, but he was cool. Like, he wasn't bullshit. And he's like, Heather, I'm not worried because I know where I'm going. And I, whether that was just to comfort himself, I have to every day remember, I know where my dad is. He's in a better place, you know? And yeah, am I fucking pissed all the time? Like, because now all these successful things happen to me in my life. And I'm like, why can't my dad be here for the good shit? He only saw me struggle in comedy for, you know, 15 fucking years. I finally get a break and the fucker's dead, you know? But in a weird way, I'm like, okay, I know where he is. And I don't know, that's just my own little protective thing, but he knew where he was going. And so I have to sleep well at night knowing that, like, he's in a good place.
That, I mean, I was not like a strident atheist, but like the death of my son has changed the way that I think about death, that it aligns, like, not like he's, I don't necessarily think that he went to a better place myself, but I am right. Like, maybe, and maybe this is just so like, I can live in the world, but I am like, well, what if death isn't bad? What if, like, on the other side, quote unquote,
right,
it's not like horrible. Like, I miss him, you know, like you miss your dad. Like, we miss
right.
The people that have died, but maybe it's not, what if it's not bad for them? Like, entertaining that possibility is something I had never done before he died. Anyway, like, I'm much softer.
I hear exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
I'm much more like receptive to the other things that I would not have been before this. I would have been like, you know, to people who are religious, there's always been an element of like, uh-huh, sure, whatever. Kind of like trying to placate them and pretend that am I being an asshole right now? But now I'm like, you know, why couldn't it be that? Why couldn't this thing that you're saying be true? Why couldn't your dad have had an out-of-body experience? There's so many more possibilities that I never entertained at all until I had encountered like real loss in my life.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, the most annoying fucking thing is when somebody comes up to you and they're like, sweet, you know, he's in a better place. Everything happens for a reason. Like, that bullshit. I literally tell those people to just fuck off. I'm like, oh, is he Cheryl? Is he in a better place? You know, cause I would have liked him at my wedding, that kind of shit.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. That's kind of rude. Cause he was here with me. So what are you trying to say?
Exactly. And I think, you know, again, it's like how you justify grief to yourself. I just have to think, and this is the theory that I really live by. I feel like my dad was such a stellar human being that he peaked. It was like he had done all these things. He had done all these amazing things. And it was just like, he was so solid. He peaked. Endiamo. It was time to go. Like, it was just, he was solid. And I know, like, your son passed young. So it's like, how do you justify that? But it was like, this was such a good spirit and soul and human that I was just like, they were too good. They had to go. They peaked.
I think that's definitely an option that I entertain for sure. That God was like, actually, he already, it's day 34. He nailed it. He's actually good to go.
Gotta go.
You guys still have some work to do. I know you're doing a podcast. God's like, we'll see about that. But then I'm probably going to snatch you too, man.
Yeah. It does give me a weird sense of, I'm able to talk about death with people. Like, it totally changes you as a human when you lose somebody like that. You're just like, yeah, it is what it is. And I've noticed that now, especially after my dad passed, you just have a connection with other people in a different way. And like, people who've never experienced grief, I don't judge them, but I'm definitely like, yeah, they don't fucking get it. You know, I really don't have any patience for people who've like never experienced a real hardship in their life, you know?
Yeah, it is like, it's one of those things. I mean, when my son died, I remember people being like, you know, I remember when my cat died or whatever. And it's like,
oh, fuck those
yes,
people.
Yes, of course
fuck
you
them.
Do.
Yeah.
But it's also like, they don't have anything else. What else can they say? They can't remember, you know, no one that they love has died. So they're like, I remember I lost a book that I really liked. And you're like, yes, sure. Of course, that's what you remember.
Oh, I have this whole thing where it's like, if when people try and relate with their grandparent, right? They're like, I know, I was really close to my grandma and she passed. I'm like, how old was she? How old was she, bitch? And they're like, she was 82. No, but after over 80, you're not allowed to ever use the term my grandparent. Like, once over 80, it's, you know what I mean? We know what will eventually happen. You know, we hope they live to 100. But anybody who's...
People who are over 80, I mean, I don't speak for all of them, but a decent number of them, like, I'm ready to die. This is, I don't need to be... people who are over 80 and die, a lot of them are like, let's go, can we speak...
Let's wrap it up.
Yeah, all my parts are busted.
Yeah, 100%. It makes you cynical, but it also, I feel like, since dealing with such a heavy grief, now when I have joyful moments, they're so much richer. And I don't, like, I'm not really being glass half full with that, but it's like when I have moments, I think because I felt such loss and hardship, now those exciting moments are just even that more exciting. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely it makes sense. And also the sense of like how it changes you with vis-a-vis like your relationship to other people. I think like a distinction I try and make is that like I have an understanding that I didn't have before of like what the universe is, but I am not a better person than I was.
No,
like I have not improved at all.
Yeah.
But I just know another thing that I, you know, it's like I've read 5 more pages in this book than you have read. I'm not smarter. I just have a little extra reading.
Yeah. When I have other friends who've lost somebody and they've never experienced grief, they're like, what do I say? I feel like the best response and all I wanted to hear was, this is fucking bullshit. I am so sorry. This is so fucking unfair. I'm pissed for you. Like, that's all you want to hear when you're grieving.
Yes.
You don't want to hear anything else except this is bullshit, because that's what it feels like. And it is.
That's very accurate to me. That like the only thing you want someone to say is like, oh, fuck, that's terrible.
Yeah.
No matter what you've been through, everybody's thing is different. So even like, you know, when someone's father died, for me to be like, oh, well, when my son died, it's kind of like, well, no, it's not about me right now. Like, it's about this is your thing that's happening to you. And nothing that I tell you, especially now when you're like in the worst part of it, is going to help you in that way. Like, the only thing that I think I can do is try and acknowledge that something terrible has happened, as opposed to so many people who are like, it's for the best. And actually this, which may even be true, but it is like, could you shut the fuck up?
Just shut the fuck up right now. I am grieving and I don't want to hear it. I know I always say to people who are like, hey, just lost somebody in my life. Like, what's my best advice? I'm like, be patient and give grace to those who don't know what the fuck they're saying to you, but also feel free to cut those people out of your life, even though they mean well, for like the next year and a half. Just drop them. Be like, we can't. Call me in 2 years. Maybe you will have lost somebody by then. You know, they're dropping like flies.
Yeah, especially now people are, it's happening all the time. They'll get it soon.
They'll get it soon.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Does the way that you relate to the grief of your dad dying, has it changed a lot?
Yeah, I mean, I don't sit in it as long. You know, I think when it's fresh, it can take you out for days, weeks. It's like now when I feel the moment, I always say, honor the moment, right? When I feel the moment, I have, you know, maybe it's a 10-minute cry. Maybe it's I get really fucking pissed for an hour. I honor it. I own the feelings. I don't try and push them away. I own it, honor it. And then, like, I go get my blood sugar checked because I'll, like, go eat a cookie or have a glass of wine. You know, it's like you got to, like, work through it. But you learn how to, like, have a different maturity about it where you're like, I'm going to have this 10 minutes to myself and then I have to keep moving on because it's sitting around is not going to help me, you know?
Yeah, I think that I believe, whether it's true or not, that like those moments of like, oh, it's coming, it's like rushing up in me right now. It's like you have to deal with it. Like, you can't
totally.
You can't like try and sublimate it, because it's going to come out like some other way if you mm-hmm. don't let yourself have a time, a good cry, if you will,
totally.
To like get that out of your system.
Yeah.
Are you still like, do you still have moments where you're like, you know, something happens that reminds you of your dad and you're just like laid out by them?
You know, it's weird. It's been in all these really happy moments. I've had a really awesome year and I feel so blessed. Like, you know, I've been on tour and I got to play the Fox Theater in Atlanta, which was like this iconic moment. Like, I've dreamed as a kid to be able to do my show at the Fox, and we did two nights and I was backstage, you know, kind of going through my pre-warm-up checklist with myself, and I'm about to walk out on stage and I just got so pissed. I was so angry and I cried for like 3 minutes, and then I had to get my shit together and I was like, Dad, why aren't the fuck you here? You know what I mean? Like, why aren't the fuck you here? And I had the moment, and then I had to release it, and I was like, all right, I'm going to do this show for my dad and keep rolling. You know, it's just, yeah, I still have them. And then also, yeah, it's a happy moment. And like at my wedding, I'm about to walk down the aisle this summer. But it's cool though. I have a feeling that my dad comes back as a yellow jacket. And I don't believe in reincarnation. And I don't believe that they're like, you know, your parents a tree. But I do think that the universe sends you little signs. My dad was the biggest Georgia Tech yellow jacket fan on the planet for the football team.
Okay.
And I think he always comes back as a bumblebee or a yellow jacket. And at my wedding in Italy, there were bumblebees everywhere. And I had said a specific prayer to my dad. Like, I talk to him all the time. I'm like, Dad, just let me know you're here. And I think he was everywhere. And that was a cool thing. Whoever sent it to me, you know, whoever sent me that message, I needed it.
There is like an ability. I'm not sure if ability or tendency is the right word, but like once you've been through the trauma of losing someone, to find things in the world that like bring you some connection to that person who's not here
yeah.
anymore. There's like,
totally.
There's this play that I used to do a monologue from when I was in college, which was very recent. I'm in my early 20s.
Yeah.
Where it says like, death ends a life, but it does not end a relationship, which struggles uh-huh. on in the survivor's mind towards a resolution it can never find. I think it's something like that. And I was doing that as a monologue when I was 19. Like it meant nothing. I had no idea mm-hmm. what I was saying, but I do think about that now and how much you're like, you see the yellow jackets and you're like, that's my dad. And
yeah.
how to a person who has never lost someone, like something like that can be like, that's fucking insane. But
yeah,
every person I talk to on this, so many people I talk to are like, I gotta tell you, I think my sister is this red-tailed hawk that flies over my house. And it's
she
all people who
is.
Are like, yeah. And
yeah.
it's all people who are like, I know this sounds fucking crazy, but the 30th person that says it, you're like, maybe it's not crazy. Maybe this is like a normal way of trying to process the universe that you were just not open to before. I mean, you may have been. I'm chastising myself.
No, I hear you. And it's funny too, because when your dad comes back as a yellow jacket, so there's always one bitch at like a picnic who's like, oh my God, get it away. And I'm like, that's my fucking dad. Nobody touched
you. You let him sting you.
Yes, exactly. You're a bitch. No one wanted you here in the first place. Yeah. Well, it was like 6 months after my dad had passed. I hadn't been stung by a yellow jacket or a bumblebee in what, like, you know, since I was a kid. And I was at the beach and I was having this moment of my dad, and I got stung twice. And I was with my friend's parents and they were like, where did these bees come from? And I was like, oh God, this is it. And since then, it's just, he comes up all the time. And I've been stung multiple times since. And I'm like, he's pissed about something. He's saying hi, you know?
He's just saying hi.
Yeah. Do you think your son visits you?
I would say, I think it's too strong to say that I think he visits me, but there yeah. are times sort of like what you're saying, where like things happen in the world and I am like, is this something? And I don't like interrogate it too much, but
yeah.
I do feel like I feel him. I mean, when I do this show, like, so I have a one-man show that I'm also working on. That's,
yeah,
it's about him. Like, I mean, it's about loss. And there are times during it or before it where I am like, I don't hear a voice. It's nothing like as clear as that. But
right.
like subtly there is like, I can only describe it as like a vibe.
That, yeah, like
there's
an
something
energy.
Else happening here
yeah.
that wasn't here before. And that may be totally self-generated. You know what I mean? Like the skeptic in me, or maybe like the realist even, is just like, of course your son is not watching you do stand-up. Like, what the fuck does he care? But even if it is self-generated, that's something. You know what I mean? It's something that is becomes real to me.
Yeah.
When he died, immediately around that time, there was a lot of like, you know, I find a parking space and I'm like, oh, thank you, Fisher.
Yeah.
And it took a while to be like, I don't think my kid does parallel parking. Like, I don't think that that's where
his
I think
he does. I'm leaning in.
That's
he
what
does.
His afterlife was. Yeah. So to answer your question, I don't know. I envy the feeling that people have of like total clarity for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. There's like a skeptical part of me that doesn't allow myself to have that. You know what I mean?
Right.
I entertain it as like possible. But never, like, you have almost like a joyful definitiveness with these conversations that you have when you talk about, like, you know, getting a sign from God or your dad being a yellow jacket that I don't have.
Yeah.
And I am like, huh, how do I get myself to trust the universe enough to believe, like, to like be more sensitive to those things if they're out there?
I think you just have to talk to the universe, like talk to your son. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? I mean, yes. I literally think the biggest thing for me now too, is my dad was just, he was just such a great guy and a wise man. And for me now in my career, it's like, I always want to pick up the phone and be like, Dad, give me some guidance. Give me some guidance. So that's the biggest thing. Like in my personal spiritual journey, I always pray. I'm like for wisdom and guidance because I don't know what I'm, it's scary making these decisions sometimes. And I think he comes to me in a little voice. And again, whether it's God, whether it's my dad, I don't know who, it's some man, you know,
it's
telling me what's going on. Yeah, it's definitely a man. Maybe I'm a misogynist. I don't know. But it's definitely a man just kind of giving you that voice. I will tell you one cool story, though.
Okay.
I was doing a show in Charleston at the Charleston Music Hall. And it was on the first leg of the tour after my dad died. And I was bummed. I was just having one of those moments. I had sold out the show. It was a big moment for me. And I was like, God, I wish my dad was here. I go out and I do mic check and, you know, just having that moment. I come out. Nobody touched the mics. Because I'm talking to the stage manager. I come out to do the show. And on the mic stand is a little piece of paper, a little piece of tape. And it just says my dad's name. It says Kyle. And that was an internal feeling I was feeling the whole time. And I looked down and I stopped the show and I'm like, this is so weird, guys. I've been out here. I did a mic check 30 minutes ago. This was not here. And after the show, I asked stage manager, the grips, everybody. I'm like, did anybody change out this thing? I'm like, no, nobody touched that. We don't even have a Kyle who works here. And I can't explain it. I don't know if somebody was pranking me, punking me, but it just had a little piece of tape with my dad's name on it. And I was like, and I looked down the middle of the show. I was like, this is so fucking weird, but I think my dad's here. Like those kind of things, like blatantly, not just a bumblebee, but like it was written in his fucking name on the mic stand.
Right. A piece of paper that says, hi, Heather. It's your dad, Kyle.
Yeah. You haven't lost weight since I saw you last.
Do you like with something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you try to like Sherlock Holmes your way backwards into specifically how that got there? Or are you just like, well, it's here and that kind of is what it is. Somehow this is here.
Well, of course, at first I like talked to my producer. I'm like, did you do this? But these were all moments of me missing my dad that were internal. I didn't say it out loud to anybody. And of course, I'm new rolling into the theater, so nobody else knew. So of course, yeah, I'm trying to Sherlock Holmes and asking everybody. And they're like, no, we don't know whose mic stand this is. But in my mind, like I do have a joyful optimism about where he is that I was like, no, I don't know how, I didn't need it to be explained. I just knew that in that moment, the universe knew I needed it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense in the context also of like you having faith in the universe operating that way that like truly I don't have. Like I believe in the possibility of things, but I'm not optimistic's not the right word. I don't like tilt towards the like having faith, like the word faith in almost anything.
Yeah.
In like some people, but not in anything beyond me. I'm interested in it, but I'm never like I never have any confidence in it.
I hear you. I don't know how to describe, and you know, listen, people will, you know, I feel like when you say you have faith in something now, people are so cynical. And I'm a comic. I'm the most cynical, dark person on the planet. But there is something that I've always, even as a little kid, I just always had faith in something. And so when I went through losing my dad in such an unfair way, it definitely fucked with my relationship with God, for sure. I was so angry. But there were moments where I was like, I don't know why, I just... this is the way it had to be. you know? And it's not fair. Like, I don't know how to describe it. I mean, you lost your son so young. Like, that's bullshit. That's not how the way it was supposed to be, but it happened. So it's like, my dad used to always say something to me, though. He's like, Heather, you can never control what happens to you. You can only control your attitude. So I realized coming on the other side of the grief, I said, I can either let this destroy me or it can be a catalyst to share the joy that my dad gave me to other people through my comedy on stage.
That makes so much sense to me. And I want to say what that sounds like is it happened for a reason. I hate to do that because I know you don't like it, but I think that's true. I think to me, when people say everything happens for a reason, I also am like, actually, could you fuck off forever?
Yeah, 100%.
There is also like, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, there is like, if you give it a reason, then there is, like, if I say, and you say, I think we say sort of in similar ways, this death, I can make something out of this. I can, like, I can keep my son alive by telling stories about him, by talking to you about him. And, like, you can keep your dad alive. Like, even the way you talk about it, it's, like, not just that, like, they're adages and attitudes that you carry with you, but also you're, like, I'm the dad of the house now.
Yeah.
Like, you are... like totally, literally keeping him alive. Like you are like embodying him. I think that you can give a reason to things. Like if you're lucky enough to be able to stand up after something like totally flattens you, I do think you can like gather yourself up and make something out of it. Like my wife became a pediatric intensive care nurse because of our experience with the nurses in the hospital.
Wow.
There's almost no way that would have happened if my son hadn't died. So would I say everything happens for a reason? Definitely not. But I would say that my wife like made a reason out of the loss of her son. Like she went in and now all these people get this care that they would not have gotten if my son hadn't died.
And that's a beautiful thing. I mean, she has such a different perspective now, right? It's like you have just your eyes have been open. You see the world completely different. It's like, how can she give back in that moment? I think that's amazing. I totally understand what you're saying. You know, it's also a wild thing with grief. We become so bogged down in our own selfishness of how we felt about that person and our own relationship with that person. I never realized how many other people it affected. You know, you feel very like alone in your journey with grief. But then I would be out, you know, at a Braves game or at a Falcons game in Atlanta, and I'd have one of my dad's buddies I'd run into come up to me like a grown fucking man in tears, or like, you have no idea what your dad meant to me. And there were those moments where I'm like, it's not just about how I feel. You know what I mean? Other people too feel something about this. And I it would take me out of my like little shithole I was sitting in. And you know, you're just stewing and you're like self-loathing and it's just these emotions pile on. And I was like, no, actually, other people are also grieving too. And how can I be a light or a vessel and a joy to them to keep that memory alive?
Yeah, I think this is what I'm an extension of that is it's not just the people who knew your dad, right? It's like all these people in the world who have had death happen to them that feel the way that I felt anyway, which is like, I'm the only person whose son has ever died. It's never had, like when it happened to me, I was like, oh, no one can possibly relate to this. There's nobody that I know. No one has ever lost a kid. And then, you know, when I sort of like coming out of the hole that I was in with my wife, you suddenly like your coworkers are like, you know, we had a miscarriage that we never talk about, or like,
all these
people, there's this massive like silent community of people who have lost parents, kids, and every kind of thing.
Right.
And nobody talks about it with any candor. And so because you have an ability to communicate and, you know, like, and to also be funny, it's like, there got to be people who come to your show who have waited their whole life to hear the jokes that you tell them. You know what I mean? People who have like, no one has ever, I've never come to a place where I can take off for like 1 second, this like cloak that I wear that hides how fucking sad I am when such and such a thing reminds me of my dad.
It's been really interesting because back to the God thing, like I believe God gives you gifts. My gift was joy and it comes through in comedy. How can I bring joy to people? And when I would meet people after the shows, they would say like you said, I haven't laughed this hard, or, you know, you leave my show laughing, but you're also like, I haven't felt something like that in a while. And it's like, people would say, I brought my sister to the show. She just lost her husband. And that's exactly what she needed to hear. And it's like, listen, if I had to go through that experience so that I can take somebody else out of their bullshit that they're feeling, then that was what I had to do. You know what I mean? And that's just my journey right now. And I think it's a beautiful thing to be able to take other people out of their shit, you know? And like, let me tell my story. And hopefully either you can relate to it or you can help somebody else that's going through it.
Yeah. Totally. And it's like this sounds so dumb, but it feels like a privilege, an honor, like for me to be able to do that for whatever, however few people I can do it for. And also an honor to like try to represent my son and maybe for you, your dad, in a way that like brings that joy into the world, that it's like he died, but it is so sad. Oh my God. It's incredibly sad, but it's not only sad. It's also like just part of like how the world is going to be.
And back to what you were saying earlier, there's a great movie called Other People. And in the movie, Molly Shannon dies of cancer. And
I know the movie. We had Chris Kelly who made the movie on this podcast.
Okay, great.
I love that movie.
Love Chris.
I'm so glad you brought it up. Oh my God. It's a great movie.
I've tweeted at Chris before and I'm not a big Twitter gal, but I literally saw that movie about a year after my dad died. And I wept because I was like, this finally someone gets it. But the direct quote in the movie, when the lead guy is talking to one of his buddies, he's like, oh, now you're just other people. You only think that shit happens to other people. And now you are that other person, right? You were the other people. That I was like, somebody fucking gets it. I'm the other people. Like this only happens to other people.
I can't believe the fact that you brought that movie up is crazy to me. I feel like twice I had Chris on the podcast, but also like I spend 30% of this podcast plugging that movie.
Yeah,
it's so good. And in my mind, you made me think of it again before we even talked about it. And I was like, okay, just wait till the podcast is over and then talk to her about that movie. But you've already seen it. It's incredible.
No, it really was like what I needed to see in that moment. And I had such an ugly cry during that movie. And I'm like, I get it now, you know, like losing my shit on a Tuesday in the afternoon watching that movie, but it was just so amazing.
It's a great movie. What can I say?
Yeah. Do you ever have moments now too, like in, you know, being in the business or whatever, like I sold the show and it didn't get picked up. Don't worry. And they're like, let's reboot it. But I was sitting on a call and one of the execs was like, hey, we love this story. We love the family dynamic. But like in the next version, can your dad not be dead? And I literally was like, excuse me? Like, yeah, Bruiser, I'd love for my dad not to be dead. But if you want my story, he's still fucking dead.
Yeah. Hey, Bruiser, is there something you could do to make my dad not be dead? Because that'd be awesome.
No,
what
shit.
I get, what I have gotten that is way more cynical than that, because I haven't tried even like in pilots I've started to write or whatever. I almost trying to write about your son being dead is almost such a non-starter for people that I have to like really find a way into it. But what I have had on the cynical side is like for people who are just business-minded 100% of the time, for them to find out that my son is dead and for them to be like, ooh, that's a really good angle. And you're like, no, you fucking absolute monster. That's not, you are wrong about that.
You're the worst human on the planet. You're like, but yes, like, I'd also like for you to read my pilot.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I know it's weird. Like I've been telling this story and I'm about to shoot the special for it. I have to write all this new material for the new leg of the tour. And I'm thinking, well, what the fuck do I say now? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm really having this like creative stump. I'm like, all right, the horrific thing that happened to me pushed me to a new level in my comedy. And it came from such a dark place. And now I'm like, do I just talk about joyful things? I don't know how the fuck to write that.
Yeah.
You know?
What are people happy about? Anything?
Yeah, exactly.
I do think like again, like making myself sound like more noble than I am. There is a like, you must have gone through this where it's like, I know that I'm funny. There's a good deal of time when you're like starting out in comedy, for me anyway, where it's like, I don't know if I'm funny. Then I'm like, oh, now I'm funny. And once you're funny, it's like, what am I going to do? Like now, what can I use this for?
Right.
And for me, it's been talking about my son. For you, it's been at least in part talking about your dad.
Yeah.
But there is a fear on the other side of that. That's like, yeah, once I talk about this, do I have anything left to say?
Yeah.
Like, is this it for me?
The tank is empty at this moment. I'm just like in a creative rut. I'm like, all right, now that we're literally going to bury him, like what's next? You know? Do I need another relative to croak? Like, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, that's your pilot. Your pilot is you going out and murdering other relatives so that you can do more stand-up.
Exactly. Yep. Uh-huh. Yeah. They're like, we need a fresh 10 every night at the store. You better bring
fresh
it.
Fresh 10. Fresh 10. That's what it's called. Look, I'm greenlighting it right now.
Please do. Please, for the love of God, greenlight it. Because, oh God, I can't go into another pitch meeting again talking about death. It's too heavy.
Okay, I have to bring, I can't stay here and talk with you forever, even though I want to. This is like the time of my life.
Well, thank you for having me. This is a therapy session for me, honestly.
Yeah, you can Venmo me.
Great.
The question that I ask at the end is, and you've already answered this to some degree, but where do you think your dad is now?
The real answer, I think my dad's in heaven sitting at a Waffle House playing 36 holes of golf every day without a bad knee. You know what I mean? That's where I think he is now. I think he's with all of our dead pets too. Like, I think he's surrounded by like 10 cats, 2 dogs, just honestly
you have
thriving.
10 dead cats?
Yeah, we've had that's also probably another TV show we could pitch, but we had a lot of cats over the years. You know, one got eaten by a hawk. It's another level of trauma. But yeah, I think my dad's playing golf every day in heaven and he starts every day at the Waffle House. You know, I do have this one thing. I hope that my dad can't see me because I have said to my husband, I'm like, you think my dad like can see me having sex? And he's like, shut the fuck up, Heather. No. But I hope my dad is, his energy and his spirit is in my life, but I hope he can't see everything I'm doing. You know what
I
mean?
Right. He's like watching you through like frosted glass. He knows you're there, but he's not like, and they're doing it again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I would think, if you had the option, like you probably wouldn't go back. Like it'd be messed up if in heaven they were like, sorry, but you have to watch your daughter have, you have to watch her do it. You have to.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. She's taking a shit right now. Tune in. Yeah. Like nobody wants to see that. I think that there's so many days that I wake up and I just know that like my dad's energy and his spirit. I mean, I am my father's daughter. My sister has so many qualities of my dad too. And you know, for us in our relationship, I'm like you said earlier, how do you share his energy and carry on his legacy? And it's just through she and I trying to be boss bitches. Like, you know what I mean? Like he was so proud of having 2 women and 2 daughters. And my sister and I, I'm always like, we just have to be as successful as we can be to honor dad in a healthy way. You know, like how can we carry on and spread the joy that dad gave to so many people?
I love that. Heather, thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, thank you for having me. Seriously.
This was the absolute best. This was A Good Cry with Heather McMahon. Thanks for listening, and I hope it helps. A Good Cry is brought to you by Radio Point and HeadGum, with executive producers Alex Bach. I'm talking Sabrina Fonfetter and Daniel Powell. Of course, Richard Corson, and don't you forget Houston Snyder. It is also produced by V. Abigail Lowenthal and mixed and edited by the one and only Ian Sorrentino.
That was a HeadGum podcast.